May it please the court, my name is Jessie Liu, and I represent Ralph Wayne Engel, the appellant in this case. This court vacated Mr. Engel's original sentence, finding that the district court had not adequately explained its reasoning for an upward departure. On remand, however, the district court imposed an even greater upward departure than it had the first time around. It increased Mr. Engel's sentence by 17 years. The court cited two grounds for its departure. First, Application Note 2 to Section 2G2.2 of the guidelines, and second, Section 4A1.3. It did not make any findings with respect to the 2G2.2 ground and focused entirely when it imposed sentence on Section 4A1.3. Therefore, I would like to discuss that section first. What the district court did in this case was use Section 4A1.3 to depart upward to sentence Mr. Engel as though he were a career criminal offender under Section 4B1.1, even though it was apparent to both parties and written in the pre-sentencing report that he was not. The precedent from this circuit, United States versus Kroom and United States versus Ruffin, makes crystal clear that a court cannot sentence a defendant who is not a career criminal offender as though he were. In the words of Ruffin, the court cannot throw away the criminal history tables and leap to the career criminal offender guideline. If the court wants to depart under Section 4A1.3, what it should do is move along the sentencing table until it finds a criminal history category that accurately represents the defendant's true criminal history. If the court feels that it's appropriate to depart upward in criminal history category 6, then it should move down the table until, once again, it finds a range that's appropriate. In fact, this court recently reaffirmed that principle in an opinion written by Judge Evans, United States versus Cross, which was decided after our reply briefs were submitted. In that case, this court reversed a district court that, in essence, leapt to the statutory maximum and sentenced the defendant to that instead of using this technique, moving down the sentencing table to depart upward from criminal history category 6. Now, this difference in approach is significant because if the district court had not leapt immediately to the career offender guidelines, it could never have reached the sentence that it actually imposed. What it did was raise Mr. Engel's criminal history category from 2 to 6 and his offense level from 29 to 34 by virtue of treating him as a career offender. Now, the district court gave 6 acts that it cited as justification for its departure. We contend in our briefs, and I'd just like to hit some of the high points of those acts, which make them so unreliable as a basis for the departure. With respect to 3 of these acts, the court never made any finding that they occurred. All that it did was note when it imposed sentence that allegations had been made. Under United States versus Ruffin, that's not sufficient to support an upward departure. The court cited yet another act that was not criminal at all. This involved Mr. Engel's talking to children at the Omni and giving them Valentine's Day cards. The court also found that Mr. Engel had gone to Mexico and molested impoverished children there. There was evidence that Mr. Engel had gone to Mexico, but there was no evidence that he had any sexual contact at all with any of these children. And there was absolutely no evidence that the children were impoverished or disadvantaged in any other way. That leaves us with one act that could possibly support this upward departure. And that is Mr. Engel's relationship with a teenager named Tommy in Georgia. Now, there's some question as to whether this sexual relationship between Mr. Engel and the teenager Tommy could have served as a basis for a 4A1.3 departure, because that provision allows a departure only when the defendant's criminal history category significantly, and this word is important, significantly underrepresents the defendant's true criminal history. Mr. Engel's relationship with the teenager taken alone, we would submit, does not necessarily indicate that criminal history category 2 significantly underrepresents his criminal history. The district at sentencing, the government was not able to show that there was any physical coercion that took place between Mr. Engel and Tommy, and it attempted to show that there was psychological coercion, but that evidence brought in through its expert was entirely speculative. The expert testified that in general children like to please their parents, and because Mr. Engel was the friend of Tommy's mother's boyfriend, that Tommy would have felt coerced. But the expert admitted that she had never spoken to Tommy, she had never met Tommy, she had never spoken or met Mr. Engel before she saw him in the courtroom that day at sentencing, and that she had no basis based on conversations with either Tommy or Mr. Engel to support that conclusion. Now, it's obvious that the district court, by doing what 4A1.3 requires and moving along the sentencing table to find the proper criminal history category, could not have reached the sentence that it did. It could do so only by jumping to the career criminal offender guideline, which is what Ruffin and Kroom clearly prohibit. Now, moving on to 2G 2.2, Application Note 2. The district court said very little about this provision when it imposed sentence. All that it said was that it found authority to depart in 2G 2.2, Application Note 2, as well as in 4A 1.3.
Can't the court depart and take into consideration when the child is from a deprived background?
Well, the evidence showed that...
Isn't that acceptable under the Cole case?
I'm not familiar off the top of my head, Your Honor, with the Cole case. But
Cole, C-O-E.
And I'm actually not familiar off the top of my head with that case, and I apologize. But one piece of evidence that did come out during the trial was that an agent of the United States government testified that child molesters in general target children who are deprived, who are lonely, who perhaps come from broken homes. And departures are designed to take into account circumstances that the guidelines themselves did not take into account. So, if most child molesters, as the government would have us believe, target children who are deprived because they're earlier, easier targets, then presumably the child molestation guidelines takes into account that fact. It's accounted for by the guidelines and therefore would not be a proper ground for another upward departure. Certainly that would be the argument that we would make on behalf of Mr. Engel. Now, I'd like to touch very
Having
briefly...
Having not read the case, that's the argument.
Moving on very quickly to 2G 2.2, the district court said very little about this and did not make any findings that the enhancement did not adequately reflect the seriousness of the abuse or exploitation involved. It did not explain why the court, why it reached the degree of sentence that it did based on this enhancement. I would like to return very briefly to the issue of Coe, and I do apologize for not being familiar with that case. But what happened here was not just any upward departure, Your Honor, but an upward departure that increased Mr. Engel's sentence by 17 years. And that's an extremely significant departure, which we argue is not justified by anything that the district court found.
All right.
Thank you.
May it please the court, Diane Berkowitz for the appellee of the United States of America. Counsel indicates that there is absolutely no basis upon which the district court could have rendered the sentence that it did. That argument, though, ignores the facts and the evidence that were presented at that sentencing. The court's basis for the sentence was 2G 2.2, as counsel has noted, and 4A 1.3. you have to consider, the court must consider those two guidelines in conjunction with one another. And the evidence that was presented certainly indicates that the criminal conduct of the appellant was more severe than his criminal history category of 2 would account for. Counsel asked the court to ignore and to assume that there was insufficient evidence in which to establish criminal conduct. But in their brief, counsel, with respect to the conduct in Mexico, the conduct at the Omni, argues that there's no evidence the defendant was charged. The cases don't require a defendant being charged. They simply require that there be evidence of the conduct. And evidence of that conduct was, in fact, presented at the sentencing. The court can, in fact, make inferences from the evidence that's presented to it, and it did so. There's nothing innocuous about a 43-year-old man, for example, presenting a Valentine to a 15-year-old boy, especially when you consider the history of this defendant.
Well, what puts him in a category 4 versus a 3? The court didn't even consider, as far as I mean, there's a big leap between a 2 and a 4. And certainly, this kind of conduct is not conduct that anyone would excuse or condone, but why wouldn't a 3 have been more appropriate? I mean, there's no analysis. In other words, he doesn't get into how many points would have been given, should he, that been a factor that should have been involved in the calculation. I mean, can you shed some light on that? Why he didn't pick a 3, why he picked a 4, which added 17 years?
Your Honor, there is no requirement that I am aware of in the case law that's applicable here that requires the court to parse out each element and assign a point to it.
But in terms of comparing, I know it's not required, but in terms of trying to determine whether or not the 4 is appropriate, you are to look at the offenses, and he could make certain assumptions. Like you said, it doesn't have to be a conviction, but certainly you can look at how many points a conviction would have added to the criminal history category, and then that might be a way for us to look at it in terms of whether it should have been a 3 or it should have been a 4.
Bearing in mind that there's no requirement that the sentencing judge actually assign points to various things he considers, this judge, though, did indicate the information and evidence upon which he relied to determine that sentence. In the case in United States versus Ruffin and in Croom, the appellate court talks about the requirement that you cannot just automatically jump to the career offender provisions and then make a determination that the defendant you're sentencing should receive that particular criminal offense category. And in those cases, that is effectively what is done, especially with respect to Ruffin. There is no indication in that opinion that any evidence whatsoever was presented. But here there was evidence. And here the court determined, based on that evidence of criminal conduct, the molestation of children in Mexico, the molestation of Tommy in Georgia, the molestation of, or attempted molestation of the children at Omni. And by the way, counsel cites one example of many instances where this defendant was attempting to solicit and groom children at that health club.
But can you give us any explanation why he jumped it 17 years from the first case to the second?
Well, I would believe, Your Honor, that based on the cases of Ruffin and Croom, that this court has asked the sentencing courts to take a look at analogous guideline provisions or analogous defendants in which to calculate that criminal history category.
But we don't have any explanation as to just why he did it.
Well, he does mention the career.
It certainly is unusual.
He does mention the career offender guideline. A career offender guideline provision. And while he indicates he is not sentencing that defendant as a career offender, that guideline level, given the conduct of this defendant, which is not charged, would warrant him going from a level 2 criminal history to a level 6 criminal history. The litany of uncharged conduct in this case is not simply innocuous. It is.
Was that brought up at the first trial?
The uncharged conduct at his sentencing? Yes, Your Honor.
Let's go through...
Then what's different?
Oh, I'm sorry.
Go ahead. Then what's different?
Well, in the first sentencing, Your Honor, the court failed to articulate any guideline provision upon which it rested for purposes of an upward departure. No guideline provision was stated. In this case...
I'm just losing something here. What in months was the second sentence on remand?
In months, I'm sorry, Your Honor, I couldn't tell you off the top of my head in months on the second. He was a level 34 on the second.
First time around, he got 325 months on an upward departure, correct?
Yes.
What did he get the second time?
I believe it was the same, Your Honor, as far as months.
So it wasn't increased after the first appeal?
It was not increased, no.
He just decided that the first sentence was the appropriate sentence here, isn't that what happened?
That's correct.
Okay. That's what I thought.
But he was, but as required by the appellate court, he needed to state a basis for that sentence, and he did so. Unlike the first sentencing, where he failed to articulate a guideline provision upon which he rested, this time the sentencing court did indicate the guideline provisions, and it indicated that those guideline provisions were that his criminal history, the criminal history category for this particular defendant, did not adequately address his criminal conduct, and under 2G2.4.
Now, Ms. Liu mentioned this Cross case, and I think if you read that, it's pretty obvious it's a case of a judge being very frustrated, believing that the guidelines did not give, it happened to be him, Judge Koukouras, sufficient leeway to sentence this defendant to what he thought was an appropriate term. It seems like there's a little bit of that here with Judge Lozano in this case. And these guidelines are frustrating for a district judge when you have someone that you think deserves a much greater sentence. But we've always said you have to really tie these kind of departures to the guidelines and do it in a real rational manner. And how is what he did here any different than what Judge Koukouras did in that Cross case?
Judge Evans, I am not familiar with the Cross case. It was not something that was I was given notice of by counsel that it would be a subject of discussion today. But based on what Your Honor is telling me, it would seem to be somewhat different than the situation with Judge Lozano, in that he has not indicated that he has no use for or is frustrated by the sentencing guidelines. He, in fact, is trying to comport with the requirements of those guidelines and with the requirement of the appellate court from the first sentencing that he make a tie-in, and he has done so. And there is no requirement that he has specifically assigned points to each item that he considers for purposes of moving both vertically and horizontally under the guidelines, the sentencing court was well within its discretion to sentence the defendant as it did so.
Let's go through these different acts. We have the sodomy conviction, so we know the court relied on that, right?
Which one, Your Honor?
The sodomy conviction in 87 for abusing the wife's nephew.
Yes.
Then we have the conviction of abusing the 15-year-old boy. So those are just given. The court could clearly rely on that. The molestation of the girlfriend's daughter, what was the corroboration for that? That was an allegation, right? It was not a conviction. What was the corroboration for that?
I believe the court may be talking about the molestation of a niece and nephew and the letter from Victoria Dragoin.
Right.
It was a letter from Ms. Dragoin directed to the court. There was no attempt that I am aware of by counsel to subpoena Ms. Dragoin to testify. And the court can take that information in conjunction with all the other evidence that
I understand, but I'm just trying to get to each thing the court relied on. So we had a letter. We didn't have any other corroboration of that. The court got that. I'm just trying to look at the various things because I agree the court doesn't necessarily have to tie the points to each act, but it seems to me that the court has to make a specific finding on each of these acts and why they're reliable and why the court counted on them with respect to a sentence when you're ratcheting up the way the court did here. Then you have the molestation of the 14-year-old boy. There's some reliability with respect to the evidence there, even though there's no conviction. This is the 14-year-old boy. Then the possession of the child pornography in Mexico, certainly there's reliability that he had the pornography, but as I understand the evidence, even from your brief, his co-defendant, or the guy that was down there filming, didn't corroborate that they were actually engaging in any kind of sexual conduct with these kids in Mexico, or maybe I'm misreading the record. Was there corroboration for that? I understand what he said his intent was, to go down to have fun with boys, but was there any corroboration that he engaged in any sexual conduct with these kids in Mexico?
Your Honor, the videotapes themselves indicate...
And he's in the videotape?
He is not in the videotape, but they are videotapes of children engaging in sexually explicit conduct, which includes masturbation.
And I understand, so that clearly that corroborates his possession of child pornography. No dispute there. The question is, because you mentioned that, you know, the implication is that he actually engaged in conduct with the kids in this, and my question was he in the tape, or what's the corroboration that he was engaged in sexual conduct? Because see, that makes a difference. The possession of the pornography, as terrible as it is certainly different than engaging in the conduct. And so that, you know, so you don't have any other corroboration there, right?
There is no evidence of the defendant in the tape. However, the defendant has email messages indicating that he is going to go down.
Wants to do. That's what I understand. I just want to make sure I got all the evidence in hand. And then we have the current charges, which are the possession of child pornography, receiving child pornography, and soliciting minors over the Internet. And obviously, that's all reliable. Those are certainly not crimes of violence. And then you have the Valentine cards, which we don't have any indication that he engaged in sexual conduct. True?
No, Your Honor, other than the attempt, other than it is somewhat absurd for a 43-year-old man to be sending
Understand. I understand. I just want to know what's the hard evidence, what's the corroboration you have for it.
Well, the other information, though, with respect to the Omni, the contact of the appellant with children at the Omni, also includes an instance where there was a young boy that he met at the Omni, under the age of 15, whom he hired to do yard work for him, and that evidence was presented. The child came to his home, and the child was then asked to shower with the defendant. That comes perilously close, Your Honor, to engaging in recognizable criminal conduct.
Right. And I think did the child actually shower with him?
I believe the evidence would indicate that yes, he did. But I think that the court can take into consideration that the requirements for sentencing, it's not that the government prove each of these instances beyond a reasonable doubt, simply that we prove them by a preponderance of the evidence. And we have. When you consider not only the acts that have occurred or that we have presented evidence on at the sentencing, but also in conjunction with this defendant's criminal history. For example, the instance of Victoria Dragoin and her allegations regarding the molestation of a niece and nephew. Consider that, Your Honor, in context with his conviction for molesting the nephew of his ex-wife.
But in terms of evidence, beyond what we've just outlined, there was no other evidence, just so I make sure I have a handle on it. The evidence that was presented to the court at sentencing. We've covered everything, correct?
The molestation of a Georgia boy.
Right.
Yes.
We covered that. Okay.
Thank you, counsel.
Thank you.
All right. 1 minute, please.
I'd like to very briefly touch on Judge Evans's question about the difference between this sentence and the last one. A number of months that the defendant received was actually the same, but the degree of the departure in this case was greater. The government dropped a cross-reference the second time around that had given Mr. Engel a much higher base level before, and so he was now subject to 97 to 121 months before any departure, whereas the last time...
We got to the same destination, we took a different route to get there.
Exactly, even though the government decided not to pursue a kind of enhancement, a cross-reference to another guideline section that had given him a higher starting point before. And I'd also like to point out that we don't argue that Mr. Engel does not deserve significant punishment, but the issue here is whether the district court properly justified its departure of 17 years. I'd like to touch very briefly on some of the evidentiary issues that Judge Williams was discussing with counsel. I'd like to refer the court to the imposition of sentence. The transcript is about 20 pages long, and pages 11 and 12, the judge goes through each of these incidents. And with some of the incidents, he doesn't even make a finding that they actually occurred. For example, this situation with the boy who did yard work. The judge said there's reliable information that complaints were made, but he doesn't actually come out and make a finding regarding whether or not this actually happened. And under Ruffin, you know, repeating the allegations and the fact that there has been a complaint made doesn't indicate that the defendant did anything. Very quickly about Victoria Dragoin, this was not a witness that had ever made an appearance in this before. She wrote a letter which was double or even triple hearsay. She didn't give very many details, and we submit that that is unreliable as well. And for all these reasons and the reasons stated in our brief, we respectfully request that this court vacate and remand for resentencing.
Thank you, counsel. Thank you. We will proceed to case number 5, please. Thompson versus Wagner.